Welcome. We have a new show for One Man's Trash this week. I'm super excited. CJ's been able to wrangle a guest this week, and I am really excited. I'm wearing this as a prelude.
Nice. As am I. There's your hint, a couple of hints.
Yeah, I mean, 16 years in the big leagues, not bad. So I cannot wait for you to introduce our next guest.
Yeah, so I'm excited. First of all, I hope this is the first of many, but this is like the perfect first-time guest. You mentioned 16 years in the big leagues, 982 games, 319 saves, 8 different teams that he played with: Detroit, Houston, Colorado, Minnesota, Philadelphia, Boston, Cincinnati, and then Florida Marlins. He is the pride of Jacksonville State University. He was a first-round pick, a former teammate of mine. Please welcome in the very first guest on One Man's Trash, Mr. Todd Jones. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys, how you doing, man? It's so great to be on your show. I really appreciate the shout-out, and I'm excited to go through One Man's Trash.
So we did a little for you. I have my Detroit jersey on. You saw me pitch pretty terrible in this one. Even though you guys were never teammates, Spilly's wearing his Colorado jersey. And looks like you're wearing the T-shirt that you slept in, I think. Is that possible?
I think it is. It says, good game, good game, good game. I hate you. Good game, good game.
And that is perfect. You know, I actually still have. Remember, you made a couple of T-shirts for us when we shared a bullpen. I still actually have those. I should break those out one day. They're in my basement. Remember the never leave?
You know what? We all did. Everybody that played as long as we did got the opportunity, because free T-shirts is where it's at. I mean,
no doubt.
Your Nike money, your Adidas money for merchandise, and then your free T-shirts is what the big leagues is all about, right?
When I retired,
my mother took all of my T-shirts that I got and made quilts.
Oh, smart!
And,
nice.
I'll send you a picture. They're amazing. And instead of having to keep them on a rack and all that stuff, you could get your family members to make a nice memory quilt for you.
Yeah, so Megan.
That's what my mom did for me.
I was going to say, Megan definitely cannot sew. How about Stacy? Is there any chance that happens in the Spielborgs house?
No chance. And most of my stuff that I have, Stacy throws it out anyway. So we're.
Okay, guys, we all played in the show. You can get somebody to make it for you.
It's a good point. It's a good point, Jonesy. All right, so here's why you're the perfect guest for this. Not only a long career, but also a guy who played with a bunch of different teams, a guy that's got some sentiment to him, no doubt, some sentimental value in the things that you've run across. You have a massive collection. You showed me some videos. I remember when we were playing together, you collecting things. I think you used to – is it accurate that you lied to guys and said, like, you had an auction, but you really just kept the stuff for yourself?
No, I actually did have an auction. But my problem was the day I got to the big leagues, I started collecting things because I didn't think I was ever going to stick.
Uh-huh.
So, like, my rookie year, I was in St. Louis, and I went up to Ozzie Smith and asked him if he would sign a baseball for me, because I didn't know how long I was going to be here. But I grew up, as we all did, idolizing all of these guys that we ended up facing. So I got autographed balls by these guys, and my problem was I started collecting so much stuff so early that now I've just got this massive collection of, I don't know what to do with it now.
Well, that's why you're here.
Yeah, that's why we're here. You're on One Man's Trash, so we can sort through it and see what's good, what's bad.
That's why we're here. So that's, I'm the perfect candidate for it. So I could probably fill a season with all the stuff I got, as bad as I can admit that.
Well, hopefully at some point we end up playing baseball again and we're not worried about necessarily filling time, but these will live on forever. So the spotlight is on you. This is your stuff. This is not our stuff this time around. Start with the first item out of the Todd Jones collection.
Okay, do you want to... Now, I brought 5 things, so we can go quick on 5 and then maybe slow down on 3 of them, or we can kind of rattle through them, whatever you guys want to do. But I wanted to kind of... So this is my Miguel Cabrera connection, because I was going back with... I've got to get my story straight for all this stuff that I'm going to show you guys today, correct?
Absolutely. So, yeah. We are allowed to lie here a little bit. It's okay.
Yeah, we're a bunch of liars. I mean,
okay, so for me, the first item was really cool. And it is, it's M&M's. I don't know if you guys can see.
A little higher. There you go.
M&M's from Air Force One.
What?
How'd you get that? That's George Bush's signature on M&Ms, and that's the M&Ms that they gave away for the people that rode on Air Force One. Now, what I didn't know was M&M Corporation or anything that ends up on Air Force One has to be gone through, right? I mean, it has to be screened, it has to be checked. So they individually wrapped Bush's own individual M&Ms.
That's amazing.
So those are authentic from Air Force One. Now, my problem is he's a left-handed pitcher that I played with in 2000, but I don't remember his name.
That got those for you?
Yep. His dad, so he was in Texas. He was a left-handed pitcher, and I'm going to be able to come up with the name that you can throw up later on. I'll have it for you. But
a lefty that we had in Texas in two, or you said in, he was with
in
us
Detroit,
or he was with,
in 2000, 2001, something like that.
Yeah, all right.
Jadakowski.
Definitely wasn't me.
He was from Texas, and his dad was either friends with Bush, like grew up with him and things like that, and their family got to travel occasionally on Air Force One.
What?
I'm saying all this kind of in parentheses because there could be...
anymore. I think you're fine with this, the Secret Service, so it's okay.
Okay. All right.
Is it Alan McDill?
Huh?
Is it Alan McDill?
No. He was a left-handed pitcher. He was a reliever.
Okay.
He was not there a long time, but he was a really super nice guy, threw really hard, had good stuff. But for whatever reason, I don't know what happened. You know how it goes with options and trade and things like this.
It wasn't Kevin Tolar, was it?
No, it wasn't Tolar.
I'll have to figure out. It definitely wasn't
Tolar. I'll look back and hit you guys later. But anyway, this cat gave me, and we were obviously pretty good friends.
I mean, besties, sounds like.
I mean, he didn't hand them out to everybody. But I got 40, what, 42s, 41s, M&Ms off Air Force One.
And you haven't eaten one yet?
No, you can't open those.
Oh, man, that's a great item. I mean, that goes beyond baseball, buddy. You're going to have
to. Although they are purified. I mean, they've got to have a longer shelf life if they're good enough for the president.
You would think so.
You know,
so that's awesome. That is a fantastic first item. That'll probably be, honestly, our first and last presidential. There may be something from guys that went to the White House or whatever, but that you ain't getting anything off Air Force One, not as a baseball player.
Okay, so that was 2001. So 2003, we go to my half a season in Boston, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the Kevin Millar 2003, so the year before they won the World Series in 2004, I was with the team on the back half of 2003, and Aaron Boone hits the walk-off home run in Game 7 of the ALCS to break all of our hearts, hit it right over our head in left field in the bullpen, because me, Scott Williamson, Mike Timlin, Alan Embry, Young Kim.
Yeah, PK.
Wasn't good enough to get into the game because Grady wanted to stick with Pedro.
Oh, sounds like I would have
stuck with Pedro. I'll go on the record right now that I would have stuck with Pedro, close my eyes and flip a coin, and you know, Jorge Posada hit a ground ball to, you know, second base and the inning's over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, Kevin Millar came up with this. Kevin Millar or Timlin, we're not really sure. Kevin Millar and Timlin came up with this cowboy up logo that they had in 2003, and a company jumped all over it and made us dip can covers that says cowboy up.
Come on. I didn't know you could.
If you're a dipper of tobacco, you can enjoy the cowboy up on the short stack of the skull. You just take the lid off and it's silver. It's awesome.
That's amazing, man. Now, is that a that's interesting you said that you weren't sure if it was actually Kevin Millar or Timlin, because Millar's the guy that gets all the credit for that.
We would have to – well, it depends on who you talk to. On the back of the plane, CJ, I think you know how it goes. Billy, I think you know. On the back of the plane, looking for an angle, you are nobody really sure who gets credit for it, but at least one of those two guys did.
That's a pretty amazing piece. And speaking of guys not getting credit for stuff, that's going to actually bring me to a Todd Jones story of something that I believe that you took credit for that was actually my idea. Do you remember in 1999 when we closed down the season, Old Tiger Stadium?
Don't say that.
And so the state, as we're getting down to those last couple of months, I said, hey, what I said to you in the bullpen, wouldn't that be a really cool idea if in the last game or the last series that all the guys that were playing in the field wore the numbers of old-time players, right? An outfielder wearing Al Kaline's number and kind of going down that path. And in my mind, it happened, but somehow it did happen. It was a great job. They took all the old-time Tigers, and everyone had a number to represent a Tiger, the great of the past, that played in Tiger Stadium. But I felt like you were the guy that got credit for that. Does that story ring a bell with you at all?
Oh, it absolutely rings a bell. And to this day, I've told that story that I came up with that. But I think you're right. I think me and you one day were talking about that in the pen, and you're way more historical and smarter than I am. So I would be willing to right now, again, groundbreaking internet service, CJ gets credit for it.
So, but
I took it to the GM, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they came up with everybody's number. So like whoever played first base wore George Kell's number, or sorry, Hank Greenberg's number. Mm-hmm. Whoever played second base, you know, there's a Hall of Famer named Charlie Gehringer. They wore Gehringer numbers. I think Brian Moeller started the game. He wore Jack Morris's number 47.
That's really cool.
And So we all wanted to tip a cap to the guys that had been there before.
Yeah, Al Kaline wearing what number? It was number six, right? And then Robert
Green
Fick.
Garcia wore number six of all people.
Oh, he wore Al Kaline's number. I thought Fick did because Fick hit the home run. Remember, Fick?
We got to go back and look.
Yeah, we'll have to go back. We'll get that all straight out. But anyway, so it's interesting how you were just talking about and bringing it up that sometimes some teammates take credit for other things. You were referencing the Boston Cowboy up situation, and yet here we are still trying to work out something 21 years later as far as what actually happened in Tiger Stadium.
I think you might have come up with it, CJ, because really, real talk, Spilly, I'm going to tell you right now, his broadcasting career did not start when he first took the stage at Fox. It was in the bullpen on the road in Texas. Texas.
Driving you all crazy.
Because we would put our feet up over the wall, and he would call the first three games, and it was amazing. He was incredible at it. He could at a whim throw up some random stat and come up with some anecdotal story of his hometown, and he drove through it one time to a Taco Bell, and I mean it was priceless.
All lies for sure.
Sure, but it was on the whim. It was great.
Grucco and Kuiper did the same thing in their final years in San Francisco. I mean, Dwayne Kuiper was the utility infielder. He has one career home run, which, I mean, he talks about all the time. And Kuiper and Grucco, they kind of built a bond, and Kuiper would sit at the end of the dugout calling baseball games, and, he was almost destined for it. So it's happened. It's cool. It's, luckily it's CJ.
CJ liked to throw it around because I think he went to Florida or St. John's. Sorry, you went to St. John's and super smart Big East school. And check me out, I can do all this. And he ended up making a career out of it.
So all of those things are lies, besides the fact that I went to St. John's. But nothing smart about what I do. All right, let's get to your third item. Your first
number
two.
Number three. You guys ready? Let's go to number three. Let's go to 2005. So I've got two of them. So, we don't have spray charts and analytics and launch angles and spin rates and all this stuff back in 2005. We got these old school scouting reports from all over the league. So I was with the Marlins in 2005, and you don't have to look it up, but you can, but I was pretty nasty that year. So we got all these scouting reports. So I just pulled up a random team, right, in 2005, and I want to read some of the actual reports that we had to use to try to get you hitters out, Billy.
2.1 ERA, 73 innings pitched. That's pretty good.
You want to know another story about that season? Is like September 15th, I had an ERA under one.
Blew it. You choked it. What happened?
So I didn't finish as strong as I should have.
That's amazing.
Okay, so Jeff Francoeur. We all love Jeff Francoeur.
Sure.
Actual words in the book coming from a scout that sat in the stand. Outstanding arm in the outfield. He will bunt. Low ball hitter. Pound him with fastballs on his hands up and in. We'll chase breaking balls off the plate. Isn't that pretty much what every hitter struggles with? He leaves the dugout swinging. You cannot walk him. So don't throw him a strike. He has some power. So then they took a little snapshot of the series before we played them. So this is like what he's done his last 12 at-bats. So he's 2-for-12, getting him out with a lot of fastballs inside and up. Definitely a low ball hitter and good mistake hitter, chasing a lot of pitches out of the K zone. Let him get himself out. So really, that translates into analytics today. You know, free swinger, it's got the little hot map, the little map that you guys bring on your broadcast, CJ. They got the little heat map of everything.
Yeah.
We had it before it was cool. You know, yeah. We had all this information. We got there's Francoeur's spray chart right there. I don't know if you guys can see that.
Absolutely, yeah. That is fantastic. So
here's the question. What if you can't throw up and in? What if you don't have a pitch that you can throw outside off the play? Like, not everybody can throw up and in. You know that.
Well, I mean, okay. I agree with that. And there's some other scouting reports that I did find humorous. And I'll never forget Pedro Martinez in a pitcher's meeting in Boston. He started talking about if you could drop your arm angle in a day game in Fenway, if you could drop your arm angle down here, you could get into the white shirts in center field and you could throw breaking balls all day and they can't hit it. And I'm like, Pedro, I don't even know what you're talking about. I have no comprehension of what you're talking about. So to your point, but if you can't throw some fastballs inside, you're not going to last. You know that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, you hitters murder us if we don't. You know how it is in the big leagues. This pitch right here.
But he has that hole.
You're out, and this pitch is a home run. I mean, that's David Ortiz in a nutshell. This is an out. This is a home run. If you hit it here, you get him out. If you hit it here, he's going around the base, and he's big popping.
So here's my thing.
That's kind of the scouting report.
When you were reading that scouting report, I was waiting for you to say, as the advanced scout said, you can't walk him, that you walked him a couple of times in that series. That's what I was hoping
to look that one up, because that was a real possibility, Chris. So we got Marcus Giles. You guys remember Marcus Giles?
Oh, yeah.
Lamborghini guy. He's 1-for-12 the last on this little snippet of scouting report. 1-for-12. He's having trouble with the fastballs from belt up with his uppercut swing. Hits a lot of fly balls because of his swing. He will chase low and away breaking balls after pounding him in with fastballs. So will everybody else, guy.
That's really great advice.
Last one. Okay, scouting report. If you're a hitter, Spilly, if you're a hitter on John Smoltz.
Okay, here you go. Split finger.
Here we go. You're all over it. Hang on. John Smoltz. Fastball 91, 95. Curveball 81, 84. Slider 87 to 90. Split finger 83, 84. Change up 83, 84. Here's his summary. Fastball, but this year he's a starter. So this is 2005. 91 to 94 is a starter. Three nasty pitches, fastball, slider, and split finger. Add to that plus command and you have lights out stuff.
That's a great scouting report. Go get him.
Breaking ball, 81 to 84. Prefers curveball over slurve. More of a curveball instead of a slurve. That makes sense. Uses tight, short slider to backdoor left-handed hitters, especially with two strikes.
Got it.
Uses changeup more than split finger against, lefties. Sometimes tough to tell difference between slider and changeup. He's a strike-throwing machine.
Nasty stuff, throw strikes.
Yeah. So he's got four pitches with plus stuff. He's a dominant guy.
That's how you get to the Hall.
You can look at the back of a baseball card and see that guy.
And listen, but,
that's kind of one of the things that I ran. So I can't decide whether to trash this or frame it.
I don't think you trash it, but it's definitely not frameable.
It's gold. That's all we have. That's what we had.
I love it, though. There's a lot of effort put into it by a lot of scouts.
Yeah, that's true.
Appreciate it.
Okay, so last item, then we'll go sentimental item back in the day. Okay, so right. Last item. 2005, I'm with the Cincinnati Reds. No, that's wrong. 2004, I'm with Cincinnati Reds. Prior to the trade deadline, I got traded to Philly at the trade deadline. So 2004, first half of the year, I'm with the Cincinnati Reds. Ken Griffey Jr. is sitting on 499 home runs, right? Ken Griffey Jr. sat on 499 home runs for 16 days. During those 16 days, every single member of his family had to travel with him.
On a team plane?
Huh?
On a team plane?
No. Junior had his own plane. I mean, come on. Don't get it twisted. And one time he had us on his yacht. That was pretty awesome, too, 122-footer. He brought it down to Fort Lauderdale and catered us dinner. It was amazing. Griffey wow. Jr., one of the best teammates ever. So, Ken Griffey Jr.'s dad is a special assistant to the Reds, right? Senior. Mm-hmm. And Ken Griffey Jr., his dad, there was nothing better than his dad coming into the locker room and wearing his ass out because he won't get this home run. So we can get going because I got stuff I got to do. Hit the damn home run, right? So Father's Day in St. Louis, he hit his 500th home run. So there's the ticket stub.
Ooh.
From St. Louis, from the home run, from the day. Okay?
Nice.
That was Sunday, and that happened to be Father's Day, right? Mm-hmm. And he hit it off of a guy named Matt Morris.
Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was Sunday. So the next day, we're in New York, right? Mm-hmm. And Nike blew up 500 red balloons and brought them into the clubhouse, and they were hanging in the clubhouse when we got there. And that's one of the 500 balloons. It says, "Congrats, Junior, on 500 home runs."
Oh, that's cool, man!
Dang.
In Shea Stadium, in the visiting clubhouse, there were 500. Of these blown up balloons.
What?
They were itchy.
And they were on the ceiling in the locker room, so I grabbed one and I put a little bitty hole in it and I kept it.
That's awesome, man.
And this is not trash because this is one of our heroes.
No doubt.
So there's 4 to 5 guys, and I don't know about you guys. I've been talking way too much. You guys tell me.
No, you're good.
Four
brother.
Or five guys that every one of us turn into an 8-year-old when we're around.
Yeah.
For me, Cal Ripken, Griffey Jr., Mark McGwire, Albert Pujols, and Derek Jeter.
Yeah. Yes, okay. Billy and I were actually just talking about that on the last episode, the idea that it's cool. Like, this game allows you to meet your heroes. Now, whether it's guys you had a chance to play with and maybe even played at the same time, right? For Spilly, he was talking about an autograph that he got from Andre Dawson. When Andre was with the Marlins, and it was an unbelievable autograph that he got from him. But, you know, something for him as a fan growing up and a guy that he fell in love with. I was telling a story last week about Dave Righetti, who I admired as a kid and actually had a chance to pitch against him as I got to AAA, and he was kind of trying to make a comeback. And now, without naming names, though, because I'm with you, there's just that handful of guys.
All right, Todd, I absolutely love Ken Griffey Jr. 500 home runs in the balloon is just absolutely amazing. You mentioned that you had something sentimental. What's the sentimental thing you have for us?
Well, okay, so this is very, very personal for me and CJ.
Uh-oh.
Because we were together in 1999, and it was a really cool year for us. Our team was awful. We were atrocious, but we had a lot of fun. And it was the last year of Tiger Stadium, and old Tiger Stadium is like old Fenway, is like old Wrigley Field. There's not a lot of room in the locker rooms like there is today. And CJ and I found this little nook in the clubhouse that is up above where they used to store the bats. there would be this staircase up there, and there was this crawl space up here. And CJ and I, somehow, I don't know if CJ did it, if he got a TV put up there, and after batting practice every single day, we would go up there and play Madden, right? 1990.
Oh, yeah. Old school Madden.
Old school Madden. And I am the typical four-year-old playing John Madden. I am not going to punt. I am not going to run.
Fourth and 15, you're passing?
I'm going Tecmo Bowl, where I roll all the way back and then throw it 80 yards Elway to whoever for the touchdown. Or I lose, right? And CJ was very tactical, so he would run and pass option, and he could read my defense, and when I was in cover two, he would run, and or he would throw to a zone, and I didn't know what I was doing. I'm just hitting defense. I don't know, because I've got my chicken sandwich and some Pepsi, and you know CJ's scheming. So every day he would pound me in Madden football, right? So one day we played where I was allowed to be the all Madden team from 1999. And he had to be one of the NFL Europe teams, which was a developmental league for the NFL. I don't know if you remember the NFL Europe.
Yeah,
but they were the Claymores. That's the name of the team.
Yeah, was Scottish Claymores. That's right.
Scottish Claymore. So he's Scottish Claymores, and I am all Madden. And it's this epic battle back and forth. And I lose to him. And Spilly, I'm telling you, within a week, he got delivered to me a Claymore's football helmet right here. And he put the date on it when he beat me, June 7th, 2001. Oh, is this 2001? Not even 99?
I thought it wasn't. No, because we definitely played in the old ballpark. That must have been a Comerica we played that one.
Yeah. So that was the first year. So I got to reset the whole story.
No, you got it. That's right. But no, that's where it started. It started
in the way of a good story.
Don't the facts get in the way of a good story. So it started in 99, and there was this epic struggle. So for 3 years, we would play batting. We would play Madden after the game. So this clown went and got this helmet, got it delivered to me, put the date that he beat me, the all Madden team. And
that used to fit your head. What happened? They used to fit.
No,
that should go in the trash. Of all the things you have, that thing should go in the trash. Todd, let me ask you: there's only been a handful of major leaguers in the history of the game to record over 300 saves. You're one of them. It's pretty remarkable. But I'm assuming, do you have your last save or your 300th? Do you have how many of your saved balls do you have?
That's a funny question, because I'm missing all but 13.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I kept everything, right? I mean, I've got all but 13 of them.
And, you have 306 baseballs from games that you saved. Is that right?
Yeah, they're above my mantle. I'll send you in the video. They're the ones above the mantle.
That is
so
amazing.
I've got my first one, my 100th, 200th, and 300th kind of set apart, and my last one kind of set apart as well. But I've got the majority of them for sure.
Go ahead, Billy. I'm sorry.
I was going to ask. So Doug Jones had over 300 saves too, and you guys share the same last name, and I'm sure people have called you Doug Jones over your career. Was it a conscious effort for you to make sure you finished with more saves than Doug Jones? You were going to stay in the big leagues long enough because he played until you're 40. You're like, I'm going to pass that guy.
Doug and I actually played together. I have come to the conclusion that I am 48% as good as Mariano Rivera.
Not bad.
And because he has 652, so I'm 48% as good as he is. But what was really cool was when I passed Goose Gossage, and if you guys have me back, I can show you the bottle of Grey Goose that Justin Verlander gave me when I passed Goose Gossage in saves.
Empty or full?
That's full.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah.
That's impressive. Hey, I think we actually, so when we were at Tiger Stadium, we were still playing whatever was MLB 99 or whatever was at the time. And remember, you could always put the point down and hit ground balls up the middle. And I knew that used to, we had a rule that you couldn't do that anymore because it was like cheating. You used to
No fair. You couldn't do that.
But. And there's a pretty decent chance that we went through a handful of controllers during that time, and we realized it was better off playing Madden, and the tradition continued for a couple more years into Comerica Park.
Some slipped out of our hands periodically. I don't know the whole story, but
landed against the wall.
They would end up against the wall. They'd end up on the floor.
All right, so real quick, last one as we get to finish up. So we never, our idea is when we have guests that we'll never bring anything on unless there's a tie-in. So I actually have something from 2000, which was a monster season for you, where you won the Role AIDS Relief first year at Comerica Park. And if you remember, you handed out to everybody in the bullpen these little mementos. Do you remember these pocket watches that you gave to everybody? I know it's kind of hard to see on there, but I'll read it. But it just says, I can't even read it because I'm going blind. CJ, 2000 LA Role AIDS winner. Thanks, Jonesy. So this is something that I keep actually back here with some of my other stuff, but a cool little memento piece, a gold pocket watch, which I absolutely love. And yeah, Rolex would have been nice, but this is still pretty cool.
Okay, so full transparency on this. I'm surprised you still have it. I'm honored you do. I wanted to buy everybody Rolexes, but at the end of the day, I'm cheap.
Yeah, it's all right.
So you got a pocket watch.
That's better than nothing.
Yeah,
probably would have given them some.
But it's for all the guys that, you know, did all the grunt, all the early work in front of me to help me out with that year. Ketcher got one, Brad Osmus, and
you think he still has it?
I doubt it.
We may have to bring him on and ask him. All right, so how about this? The story of you winning the Rolaids, it went down to the last day of the season. I've actually told this story, I think, on Loud Outs, our Saturday show that Spilly and I do on the weekends on Saturdays for MLB Network Radio. Do you remember how that ended, that season, and how you actually won this award?
I think I do. I mean, my stories today have not been that credible as far as exact precise things. But going into the weekend, I went save, win, win.
Yeah, you needed the win. Do you remember how you got that win?
Somebody... Dustin Allen or somebody hit a walk-off home run.
So it was the last game of the year. It was a really long game. You came in. You were 2 points short, right? You got two points for a win, I believe, in the Role AIDS Relief, 3 points for a save. You were a win short. We were losing in the ninth inning. You came in and finished the top of the ninth inning. You only had to get one out. I believe Phil Turner brought you in to get the last out in case we came back and won.
Yes.
So you finished that inning. Bottom of the ninth inning, we come back, we win the game, you get the W, you get the 2 points, you tied Derek Lowe in total points because he did not get a save that day, and you won because of save. You had a higher save percentage than he did.
That's exactly that
right. That is being a beauty, man. That was unbelievable. And because of that, I got a pocket watch.
Did I back into that award or not?
It's safe to say.
That's the question. Derek Lowe will tell you I backed into it because he did it in Boston.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good point. That's all right. Sometimes it's a little bit more pressure pitching on a bad team than it is on a good one.
I got the trophy in my basement, so I don't
really care what he's doing. It was nice to have you on the program. We appreciate all your time that you did and shared with us.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for you guys inviting me. Spilly, congrats on your career.
Thank you.
Congrats, CJ, on your career. And I appreciate what you guys do, keeping the positive good things going. And we're all excited about it, so thanks.
Love to have you back on.
Got it, brother. You're the best. Thank you, Jonesy.
Good man, Jonesy. Thanks for picking the teaching, everybody.